Welcome to the Pulp MX podcast show. I'm Steve Mathis, and this is a mid-season motocross review podcast, if you count mid-season as being round eight. With me in the studio here is Jason Thomas, JT. What's up?
Not too much. Just glad to talk about some outdoors. Haven't actually got to go to one this year, so been missing it a little bit.
And on the line is the usual third musketeer who's pulling duty, extra duty, Wygant. Jason Wygant, what's going on?
Yeah, I'm on a layover right now in Houston, headed from home to Los Angeles for the X Games, and I just did this yesterday, flying from Portland to home.
Right.
But my wife called me, I was in Portland, and she needed me to help with a diaper change, so I flew all the way across the country real quick to help out.
Yeah, it's almost, well, I guess you got one day of sleeping in your bed, but it was almost kind of you should have just went straight to L.A., huh?
Yeah, I had to get up at 2:30 in the morning, so I had, 3 hours sitting around bed.
Wow.
Once you have a kid, it's a little bit different. That couple extra hours actually somehow really made a difference.
Right. You're actually pumped on it.
Yeah.
Well, we just had round eight Washougal. Dungy is running away with this thing, and Weege, what do you think about it? Any surprises? I mean, we knew he'd be good. Hangtown, he wasn't, but we knew he'd be good. But did we know he'd be this good?
I don't think people expected him to be this good. First of all, at the beginning of the season, I don't know if you've heard this story before, so stop me if you have.
Right.
The beginning of the season, it was wide open. It was a season where anyone could win. It was going to be just like it was in the mid-'80s, and it was exactly what the sport needed. No way any one rider was going to dominate. No way.
Yeah.
And then surprisingly enough, one rider has taken control of the series. Not me if you heard this story before.
Our sport is like that. You're right. JT, can you believe that he's this dominant? I mean, he's won. Weege, what's the stats? He's won seven races in a row. How many motos?
I'm trying to remember. I believe he's won 12 out of 16.
I think it's maybe like 13 out of 16.
Yeah, I got the points right here.
He didn't win the first two. And I believe he didn't win two first motos.
Oh, you're right. Yep. Shorting.
Bud's Creek and Colorado. Yeah, so 12 of 16 moto wins.
Yeah, 12 of 16.
That's ridiculous.
JT, what do you think?
I don't know. He's obviously got something figured out. I wouldn't have predicted that. I thought he would be good. You know, obviously he's always been at the front the last 2 years in every class or series, but he's obviously on a different level than those guys right now.
He's just in better shape. I mean, not. I shouldn't say he's just in better shape. That is a massive reason, I think, why he's just dominating.
Yeah, it helps. But his kind of, I don't know if the racecraft is the right word, is really good right now. You know, he's not hole-shotting every time, but he's not putting himself in bad spots off the start.
Mm-hmm.
And then he just kind of settles in and follows those guys and doesn't panic. You know, it's not like he just blows by him a la James Stewart or Ricky Carmichael. You know, and then it's like they put in their little sprint, and he may be 3 seconds, 5 seconds back. But then at 17, 18, 19 minutes, here comes Ryan Dungy, and then they just really can't – they have nothing for him when he gets there.
Yeah.
So.
Hey, JT, I want to ask about obviously he is in awesome shape, and we know he's always been a trainer and all that stuff. But, you know, he also does get criticized sometimes with, oh, we don't see the blazing speed. He doesn't do anything that blows your mind. But how much of that – kind of mechanical, smooth riding style that he has helps him not waste energy and not get tired, because he sure doesn't seem like he's exerting himself hard. You never see him hanging off the bike or anything like that.
Yeah, I don't think it's too much because...
Yep.
No, because like Ryan Villopoto's style is 100% of the opposite end of the spectrum as far as aggressiveness, and Ryan can go that speed for 45 minutes, you know. I don't think it's so much that. I just think it's his style, and... You know, you get used to riding like that, and I don't think Ryan Villopoto feels like he's exerting that much energy when he's riding. It's just how he rides, you know. That's how you get used to riding. It's how you practice riding, and just you get used to it. It looks really tough to do, and like you're on the ragged edge, but that's how you feel comfortable. You know, Ricky was the same way.
True.
And then I guess the other big story in the 450 class is Chad Reed, your buddy Chad Reed. He is out for the season with Epstein-Barr. But up until he was even out for the season, he wasn't wasn't doing it like we thought he would. JT, what's your thoughts on his year? I mean, what happened at Hangtown? And then what happened everything after that?
Yeah, I don't know. We had this conversation before Hangtown, and I kind of...
Hey, Weege, how much you want to bet he's not really going to tell us anything that he knows? Like, he might know something, but he's not going to tell us.
Man, I sure hope he wins the bet and makes a lot of money, because if he does spill the beans, he's going to be in some big trouble.
Right.
I hope he makes some money if he screws this up.
Okay, all right.
No, I like what you saw at Hangtown was kind of what I thought was going to happen. He came out and was one of, if not the fastest guy.
Yeah.
And all the work he had put in during the last few Supercross weekends, the last month or two of the season, showed up at Hangtown. We got to Texas, and I don't know, stuff started unraveling. He didn't look like the same guy as, the week before, and then just seemed to compound. He was crashing on the start, crashing the first lap, just bad thing after bad thing, health problems, who knows, it was just kind of snowball until we got to the point where, it seemed like his confidence was shaking a little bit and couldn't get anything to go right. So I'm not 100% sure what's going on. Obviously he's one of my best friends, but I'm not totally sure he knows either.
Right. Well, I was the one who said you can't flick a switch, but he flicked it. But then it flicked it the other way too.
Yeah.
It's like there's a bad breaker or something.
Yeah. Like I was positive you just can't do that, or I thought you couldn't. And then at Hangtown, I was like, well, I guess you can't. But then it never came back. Like, I don't know. It was like Hangtown was just a different race. I mean, and we'll get to Mike Alessi in a little bit. But, he won a moto in a domination fashion. Didn't even break a sweat. And,
Yeah, it's one of those things. And I've kind of developed this theory over the last few years, because I've struggled with it personally, is when I come out of Supercross season, it takes me a really long time to get up to speed for outdoors.
Right.
Just because it's a totally different style of riding. Your momentum is different. The way you corner, as far as squaring everything off in Supercross, and obviously outdoors is just wide open and momentum.
Mm-hmm.
It takes me a really long time to change my, outlook on the track and everything to outdoors. And I think that guys like Mike Alessi, Eli Tomac, Chad Reed, all these guys had a couple months of practicing and building up their speed for outdoors, where all these other guys, Ryan Dungey, I know, was practicing Supercross up until the last race to try to win the series. So I think that was part of it. Those guys, Dungey, these guys, finally they got more of their outdoor speed back, and then the gap kind of closed down. And I think you saw that a lot with Tomac. He went from clearly the best guy to, at Texas, he was the same speed as the top few guys, and then the gap just closed down even more.
They caught him, yeah.
Right, exactly. And I think that's happened with Justin Barcia last year. He came in as a rookie, 100% prepared for outdoors.
Yeah.
Started out the best guy, and then the gap slowly closed. So I've seen it year after year, Josh Grant, the same way these rookies come in, and then it changes. So I think that's part of it also.
Okay. Hey, Weej, we did the preseason podcast. We talked a lot about Ben Townley, and you guys were pretty pumped on him, and I was kind of hesitant. I have to say, he surprised me where he's at. But to you, this is about what you thought?
Yeah, it is. Although, I'll give you a little credit. You had asked us actually about Townley and Grant Langston.
Well, I was going to get to Langston,
If you look at those two coming in, it'd be very hard to figure who would end up being better. Pretty much, their last racing was 2007 for both.
Right.
They both have similar credentials. In a way, you could say Townley's injuries may have been worse. Langston had an eye problem, and that was supposedly behind him. It wasn't like it was crash-induced, like, oh, Townley hurt his shoulder, he'll always be scared of hanging out, stuff like that, you know what I mean? So it was hard to pick between the two, and as far as teams go, bikes go, kind of unproven with both of them, and 50-50, it's worked out. I mean, Langston is nowhere. I don't even know if he's gonna continue racing. I haven't seen him the last few weeks, and Townley, it is pretty crazy. Even with the expectations I had, it was crazy to me to think halfway through the year, man, Ryan Dungey is the man in the sport right now, and maybe the only guy that can stop him is Ben Townley. That just sounds crazy, even though I expected big things from Ben. I mean, he was at one point, you could count on him even more than Reed. I don't think we ever expected him to be that good.
Yeah. Yeah, he's been a victim of just some tip-overs and, you know, stalls. And this week in Washougal, obviously, he went DNF from a crash. He's been... Well, I guess this could you could just say ifs and buts and candies and nuts, but he's been a few small problems away from being the second place guy every week.
Yeah, so if you're a team and you're looking at, you know, things for next year, for example, it was maybe a risk for Troy Lee to even try this. They never raced the whole series. They never raced the class. But now all of a sudden you have to look at Townley. Well, that's a legit prospect. And I know he doesn't want to race Supercross anymore, but in general, the stock was about as low as it could go for that guy, and now he, out of anyone you could pick to have on a team outdoors, he'd be right in the mix, which is quite an improvement from where he was 6 months ago.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And JT, you know, we talked a lot about Langston, and you said, I mean, Weege, he was pretty adamant that I was incorrect.
That
Grant,
yes, he was.
That Grant Langston could podium, could make top five. I didn't pull the clip, I meant to, but, you know, it was along the lines of, you're telling me a world champion, a national champion, Grant Langston can't make top five. He was very...
The word was incapable.
Incapable. Yes, thank you. Incapable. Well, I just want to say, nothing against Langston, good guy, but think for me. Chink.
I still say he's not incapable. Just because it didn't happen doesn't make someone incapable.
Oh, God.
That is an ironclad defense. You cannot beat that.
Yeah, exactly. Just for the record. But
yeah, I mean, obviously, I don't think...
He's had it rough.
I don't think his season went to plan. I mean, he crashed on a parade lap, like, hard on a parade lap this year.
Yeah.
You know, that's a sign that things aren't going well. His team fell apart around him.
But,
you know, it's kind of gone as bad as it could go, barring, you know, serious injury, which he had Red Buddy kind of did have a serious injury. So I feel bad for him. Obviously, the last 3 years have not gone to plan, you know.
Yeah.
If you would have told him how it's going to go, you know, right after.
Win the title and
Helen,
then.
Yeah. Probably would have cried, you know, because it's just been that bad. But hate to see it. The guy's, you know, a
class
great
act.
Rider. Yeah.
Class act guy.
One of the winningest riders, you know, ever. World championships, you know, he's won like every championship there is to win other than a 250 Supercross championship. So kind of a bummer deal. But
are you guys surprised at Andrew Short's, I don't want to say lack of fitness, but Andrew Short going backwards? Are you guys surprised like I am?
I am. Personally, I don't get it. I mean, I know
he's kind of stopped the leak, that the sinking in the last couple weeks, but
I know, like, the guy works extremely hard.
Right.
Extremely hard. And I know, like, the level of work that I put in, and I think he probably works harder than I did.
Right.
You know, and I didn't have a real fitness problem. You know, I probably wasn't pushing as hard as he is to try to go at the beginning like he is, but I think that there's a hole somewhere. You know, as fit as he is, he should be able to hold on to that. And, like, at Millville, I was watching his lap times, and they dropped off substantially in the last 10 minutes where I thought Regal was going to get him. You know, and I don't think...
Regal did get him.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I don't think that has to happen for him. You know, there's something going on. I know he's at Red Bull deal right now trying to figure out all this stuff because I'm sure it frustrates him more than anybody else.
Yep.
It could, you know. So I don't know what the answer is, but I think that it's not... You know, I have to do one more moto every day, or I need 10 more minutes. It's something else.
There's something
missing,
right,
for sure.
Weege, what do you think?
Yeah, it is a little bit surprising, for sure, because every week we have people saying, well, I don't understand, you guys are saying he's the hardest working guy in the sport. What's the problem? But I think it goes back to, I don't know if it was this preseason podcast or one of the ones the three of us have done, where we talk about how the effort being put in is not directly related to. It's just not that simple.
Right.
We all like to think the guy that works hardest during the week wins.
Yeah, like Dungy doesn't work the hardest, and then Shorty works second hardest, and then Metcalf works the third hardest or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, that's the point. Exactly.
Right.
I don't know. But I think in some ways, Short season has been good. It's unfortunate because he's gone from nowhere, basically, at Hangtown, where he got, I think, 15th and a 5th or something.
Mm-hmm.
And he's actually second in points, which is what he pretty much does every year. Ends up just getting points every week. If he had just started 4th in every moto, it'd be an awesome season for him. But he starts about 10 feet further up the track, and he looks like a chump.
Yeah, he averaged.
That. It'd be one thing to say, hey, Dungy's on fire and he's getting beat by Dungy, but the problem has been up until recently that then he goes to second, third, fourth. That's the problem, and that surprised me big time.
Right. Although his last moto scores have been a third, a third, a fifth, a third, a second, a second. That's his last.
Yeah, like I said, it's getting better lately, for sure. And I guess the last one here, Schugel, was probably the best yet.
It's a little surprising. But, I mean, at the same time, it's a little surprising, but he's in second in points, and he's beating 38 other guys. So,
well, you know? I have a theory on that, though, that there are some guys, that you and I talked about this, Steve, on Saturday night, there are some guys that are willing to work as hard as they possibly can and know that they're going to end up second in the series. And there are other riders who, when they're only getting second or third, something like that, their world starts collapsing around them.
Yeah.
I think that's why Reed started looking for answers and is maybe out of the series, whereas Short, if Reed had gotten 8 hole shots and had gotten passed and blown away by Dungy, I'm sure he'd be feeling a lot different about it than Short. He's just, well, I'll go to the Red Bull compound and just keep working, and maybe one of these days I'll finally beat the guy.
Right. Good point.
Yeah. I don't think everybody can do that like he can.
Right. You know, there's another thing about the preseason podcast. I was very, very high on Brett Metcalf. And I think he's justified my thinking.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like this podcast is turning into a Steve's right, everyone else is wrong podcast.
I called it. Well, he struggled in a little bit of recent motos, Medi has, but he's been pretty good, right?
Yeah, I mean,
better than you thought, JT?
Or
right about where you thought?
I think he was better than I thought at the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
I think he's kind of settled in to where I thought he would be, like top five.
Yeah.
You know, riding really well, maybe third, but anywhere from 3 to 6 is about where he's going to end up.
Yeah, he has leveled off a little bit, huh?
He came right back, though, pretty strong at, he had one bad race at Millville, but he was right back to his old tricks, I felt, out at Marshugel. In fact, I thought this was a typo. I cannot believe this. Rockstar gives out an award for whoever has the fastest second 450 moto lap time.
Uh-huh.
And Dungy has had it so often lately that me and your boy Keen Wolf, our video guy, we actually shot and edited the whole thing at the track Saturday after the race without even looking at the lap times, assuming it was Dungy again. But believe it or not, by 0.2 seconds, Brett Metcalf had the fastest lap time of anyone.
Really?
In a second moto at Washougal. Because I believe he had a good start at Moto 1 and a bad start at Moto 2, and he had to do some work to move forward. But I think that was just one bad race. I think otherwise he's been in the same spot, which is good.
Has he surprised you, Weege? Has he surprised you? Or
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. You know, he's kind of in the same spot that he always was in the 250 class. You know, that
guy,
sometimes podium, third, fourth guy,
right.
Not winning the races. But considering the guys he's racing against now,
right.
You know, it's one thing when you're getting third and fourth and you're battling with, I don't know, Stroop or Weimer, but now he's doing it with Reed and Dungy. You know what I mean? Like, that's a step up, I feel.
And in the step down department, Josh Grant, not as good as I thought, Weej.
Yeah, I think there was a miscalculation on the part of that team. They tried to, I guess, go for what JT was talking about before, we're not even going to do Supercross. And then all of a sudden at the Texas or High Point, I heard him saying, oh, it's going to be 5 or 6 rounds until I really feel 100% because I haven't raced in so long. And I'm thinking, why would you give up half of the series? So he could have ridden, 4 or 5 Supercrosses at the end of the year?
Yeah.
And J-Bone's actually admitted now, if they look back at it, that probably wasn't – they probably would have gone the other direction. But and then, lo and behold, at the 5th race at Colorado, he wins a moto. I'm like, oh, now it's all coming together.
Yep.
But I guess not. And he definitely has the speed, and also, always with him, he definitely has the confidence, I'm sure, to believe that he could be beating Dungy in these races. So the fact that it's not happening is not good.
Yeah. What do you think about Grant, JT?
Yeah, I don't know about that because, like, Hangtown, I felt like he was pretty ready. Like, he was catching Chad at the end of the moto that Chad won.
Right.
You know,
he was fire.
A second behind him at the finish line.
Yeah.
So for me to look at that and say, oh, he wasn't ready, he should have been racing Supercross to get ready, I don't buy that.
Yeah.
You know, he passed Mel Sapsy passed all these guys to get to the lead, you know, with one lap to go.
But it was like Hangtown was a different world. Yeah. Wygant and I have talked about this. It's so weird.
But I feel like it's what I was talking about. I feel like most of these guys weren't ready for Hangtown, like Josh Grant, Michael Lessie, Chad Reed.
Those guys were ready.
Yeah, they've been riding outdoors.
Well, Reed was racing Supercross. I don't know if you saw.
He wasn't practicing Supercross. He didn't ride Supercross for 2 months. He raced on Saturdays.
Really?
Yeah, I was the only guy out there. Trust me. I was riding by myself, and Chad was motoing outdoors. That's why I was really high on Chad coming into the outdoors, because I knew the work he had
put in.
He was
riding outdoors, right?
Yeah, I mean, these other guys were riding Supercross like me, and Chad's out there, you know, getting more prepared and already one of the best guys.
So Michael Lessie, Josh Grant, Chad Reed got the jump on everybody outdoors at Hangtown.
Eli Tomac. Yeah. I mean, you could pretty much look at everybody.
Millsaps?
That was at
front. Well, Millsaps.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, whatever. Okay. Who knows? That guy, that guy, when he wants to do good, seems like he can, no matter what the conditions or the track. So,
yeah. So, okay, so back to
Josh Grant.
Josh Grant.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's more of the same. I think he's one of the most talented guys, one of the most capable of setting the world on fire. But it just seems like inconsistency is kind of his MO career-wise, you know? And it's unfortunate. Yeah. I think, you know, he's going to look back and be like, you know, I could have done this different, I could have done that different, and I would have been a front runner every time. But, you know, I would kill to have his talent. I can tell you that. Yeah. Like, I can ride the wheels off a bike.
Yeah.
I just don't know. I think it's kind of the same story.
He's kind of got a bit of an attitude, like, that he's the guy, but yet maybe, like, is that helping or hurting him?
I don't know. I think you have to have that at some, like, at some level.
Like, Andrew Short could use that attitude?
I think you have to. I think Andrew has that. I don't think it's as apparent in his personality.
Yeah.
But I think deep down, you know, if push comes to shove, he has that.
Right.
You know, I'm better than you. You know what I mean? I'm the guy. I know he has that for sure. Like, you can't be at a top level, you know, at any sport. You know, when I go to Germany and I feel like I'm the guy.
Oh, here we go, Weege, the first Germany reference.
No, but I can relate to how those guys feel, because when I go there, I have a different mindset.
Yeah, yeah.
The races I feel like I can win, I go there like, get out of my way. You know what I mean? I have a job to do. I'm here to win. Don't mess with me.
I'm da champ.
Yeah.
Das champ.
No, it's not like that. It's just, you come in with a different way of thinking about the race, and I think that all those guys have that.
A wunderkid, if you will.
No, that's like Roxen. Oh. I'm too old to be that.
Oh. Well, it's that time in the show, Weej. Time to talk about Michael Lessie.
Yeah.
What is going on? I am of the opinion that it is a lot of Michael Lessie's problem is that motorcycle. We spoke about it in the preseason podcast, and we didn't know. All of us were like, we don't know. And, you know, Glenn Helen GP comes, and the bike performs pretty well on hills and starts. And so, you know, he wins a moto at Hangtown in a dominating Michael Lessie fashion, and it shut all the naysayers up. But now, I don't know.
They're talking again, I guess?
Yes, they're talking again.
Is it possible to shut people up and then they come back to life, I guess?
How much, Weege, in your opinion, how much is Michael Lessie's struggles due to the bike? Can you put a percentage on it? What's your feelings?
Yeah, I think the bike does have a lot to do with it. And you said how Hangtown is like the weird race. KTM, who has been searching, clawing, scratching, every once in a while they get a little bit of traction, are almost right there with the other teams. They even won a title once with Langston Outdoors. And then they have some bad years, and they come back. And then at Hangtown, they roll out like this new truck and this new team and these new bikes, and Everett is there, and they're all proud. Tommy Searle comes within a lap of winning the first moto in the 250 class on an all-new bike with a linkage. And then Alessi comes out and almost wins the overall and wins the moto on an even more radical bike. I mean, after that race, you know, then the next week they go down the road to Glen Helen, and the 350 wins with Caroli.
Yeah.
I mean, for that 7 or 8 day span, it was like, look out, KTM. They might finally have the breakthrough, like hitting McGrath on the bike and all these things they were going to try. And then now it's terrible. Searle barely has even made it to the races with a shoulder problem, and Mike's gone backwards. And I have to think the bike has something to do with it. I know Mike had some injuries last year, but I can't see how it's affected him, that he's ruined physically to that degree.
You said,
I find that hard to believe.
You said the bike has something to do with it. Does it have the majority of Mike's problems? The dissed up starts, you know, the Lakewood elevation, the red bud, LaRocco's leap that he couldn't jump. How?
It would be impossible to say for a guy to go from, you know, winning at the beginning of your last year and now battling for 8th and 9th.
Right.
To say that it's 100% bike is probably a lot of speculation in there. I mean,
I'm looking for a number.
Perhaps,
I'm looking for an 87%, 72%.
Oh, okay. Like what? 72. And a good, like, Walmart rollback price number, like a $5.5.
Yeah. Give me a percentage that bike is the Mike Alessi's problem.
All right, well, if I get in trouble with this answer, it's because there's no real way to answer this question.
I know, but that's
awesome.
I'll
give you a number because you want one. I'll go 70-30. How about that?
Okay, I believe it's 81% of Mike Alessi's problem.
81-19.
Yes, yes.
You're going 81-19. Yes. I'm going 70-30.
Okay. It has been a frustrating year over there. Tony has been searching for answers. Mike has been searching for answers. I did a podcast with him. It's on PulpMX, and Mike sounds like he's very depressed. Says he's never been this low in his career. He's this bummed out. So, JT, thoughts on Mike Alessi's season?
I just think it's been really tough. I don't think he's ever been at a disadvantage equipment-wise.
Right.
You know, I don't know that, for me to say it's a disadvantage, I've never ridden the bike. So,
yeah.
But
you have eyes. You have two eyes.
Clearly on the starts, right, it's a disadvantage.
Yeah.
You know, the guy's one of the most proficient starters in the history of motocross.
Yes.
And the guy starts 15th every moto.
Right.
You know, that's never happened
yeah.
ever. So
well, that's my whole
to
point.
Turn a blind eye to that equipment-wise is silly. And I think I don't know that he's used to racing from 15th every moto. I don't think he's ever done that.
That was my next point. If there was one guy who you would not want to give a not want to hurt off the start. You know, Mike LaRocco, they could give him a 350, and Mike's like, oh, cool, I'm still 20th off the line.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm still working hard. Timmy or whatever.
And if he had a 550, he would have still gotten
yeah.
20th place start.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, right. Exactly. But if there's one guy you don't want to mess with who probably doesn't have a whole lot of experience in coming through the pack, it's Mike Alessi. So, I mean, that's part of his problem, too, is the fact, not the bike, but after he gets the bad start, I would believe Mike wouldn't be the best rider to be coming through a pack of riders.
Yeah, I think, too, to make passes on guys, a lot of times, you know, you're behind the guy coming through the turn, obviously.
Yeah.
But to get a run on somebody on a slower bike is really hard.
Yeah.
You know, if you're on an equal bike and you're better than the guy, yeah, you come out, you know, you use your
line. As a privateer rider, you know a little bit about bikes.
Yeah, and, yeah. It's just, I can't imagine trying to, on a dissed up track, trying to get, you know, from behind somebody next to him and pass him on a straightaway on a slower bike.
Right.
It's got to be tough.
Yeah.
You know? And that's not something he grew up doing. You know, it's something, like you were talking about, it's something that, you know, I think you develop a skill of it. Over the years, you get better and better at it.
Yeah.
And I think he's more adapt to racing from the front rearwards if he has to.
Yeah.
You know, it's obvious how well he rides defensively. He probably rides one of the widest bikes in the history of racing.
Wider than Lewis? Kyle Lewis?
No, that's actually physically impossible. Jeff Emig and Kyle Lewis.
Yeah.
He'd take two bikes to go
together. Or Heath Voss.
Heath Voss is pretty good too, but I still say
Lewis,
Jeff Emig.
Champion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. I mean, the guy single-handedly ruined my race before. And I was, you know, never knock me down, just ruined my race mentally.
Right.
But.
Okay, so second in the world would be Mike Alessi, widest bikes.
Yeah, I think Ben Townley may have something to say about that also.
Right. Yeah. Right. So what does he go? What happens from here, Weege? What goes on with Mike Alessi? Is it just, continue to take a beating?
I said this somewhere, and it might have been in the preseason show, that KTM's in a bad spot because they're selecting to market the bike and race it for the first time at the very highest level, where they're actually are riders that can use the whole 450. I know that everyone that doesn't race claims that 450s ruin racing because, and apparently it doesn't matter what JT says or any of the guys that are on them, they claim, oh, these guys cannot race these bikes, they can't ride these bikes, they can't pass on these bikes. I believe they are afraid of stalling, right, so they don't try to pass each other.
Oh, that was somebody told you that at a high level.
Yes, I was at a very high level, that you guys are so afraid of stalling your four-strokes, that's why we don't have good racing anymore. Because remember in the McGrath days when you win every race, how awesome the battles were?
Yes, exactly.
So anyway,
yeah.
So anyway, the theory that, you know, a 450 is too much for most riders, well, maybe not at that level. So for the average guy, a 350 could be a really good bike. But unfortunately, KTM isn't proving it for the average guy. They're trying to prove it at the elite, elite, elite level, which is a really tough situation for them, man. So now the bike looks bad in the public eye. It might actually not be bad for the majority of people that would want to go out and buy a new bike. And they're stuck because they can't. If they put Mike in a 450 now, I mean, they might as well pull the plug on the assembly line. You know, that's pretty much them admitting the bike sucks. Yeah. And then the Alessis, they can't go out and blame it on the bike. They don't want to blame it on themselves physically. So it's just a bad deal all around if the bike really is the issue.
Yeah, I feel
if
like...
for some reason, with something wrong with the bike, they've got an awesome scapegoat, but I don't think that's the problem.
I feel like Mike and his dad feel like the bike is the sole problem, and they're in a tough spot. They don't want to say too much, but I do feel
like
that.
They don't want to say too much, and if you're KTM, you can't give them a 450. It would be a disaster.
Yeah.
KTM to do that.
Exactly. Hey, a couple guys just getting out of the 450 class. A couple guys that you can just throw in the mix, Sipes and Chisholm. JT, impressed with them?
Absolutely. Obviously, Sipes was incredible last weekend.
Yeah.
You know, practice times to, you know, you could kind of see him coming mm-hmm. through the pack.
Yeah.
You know, on TV, it's kind of tough to.
Second moto, he went down in the second turn when he was fifth. And then,
Yeah. I mean, those guys are riding really, really well. You know, obviously, I think their team has to be excited with, you know, the results they're getting. So, that's cool.
Is one better than the other?
Not really.
If you look at the results, Chisholm DNF'd both motos at help me out here.
Red Bud. Yeah.
Chisholm would be ahead.
Right.
He's only about 10 back now.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. They're equal?
Yeah, I think Sipes is maybe a little bit more take chances blazing speed guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Chisholm's going to be that 7-8-9 every moto type guy.
Yeah.
You know, Chisholm, he's obviously still going fast, but
Chisholm's going really fast, but he's the slowest looking fast guy I think I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, his style is stand up and flow. And, but he's going fast.
Yeah.
He's riding really well.
Yeah.
You know, Chisholm's wasn't really his fault. He got in a big first turn crash at Red Bud and was hurting.
You know, it's
tough to race when you're hurting. So.
Yep.
They're both riding really well. I wouldn't have
thought it.
Maybe I wouldn't have thought they were both be in the top 10
mm-hmm.
at this point, but you know.
What do you think, Weege? Who's better, Sipes or Chisholm, or does it matter, or what's your thoughts on it?
Yeah, it's so close, and I do think it is like it's like fire and ice. It somehow works out the same.
Yeah.
Sipes has always been, speed's never really been an issue for Sipes. It's just keeping the thing together. You watch him ride, he looks fast. And then you watch Chisholm ride, he doesn't look fast. And maybe he's a little more consistent. And lo and behold, here we are within 10 points of each other.
Yeah.
It's not halfway to the series, Steve. It's three quarters. So.
Oh, yeah.
It'll be interesting. And I know they're also keeping tabs on Regal to try to be top privateer. And then Regal is the ultimate inconsistent. You know, goes and passes all of factory Honda one week and then crashes out the next week and doesn't even ride. So.
Yeah, we should touch on Regal.
I'm impressed with all three of those guys. Yeah, I guess we should, huh?
Yeah, and even Tommy Hahn, who's been really fast, but. Bike problems, crashes. Tommy Hahn is 11th in the points and should be much, much better. But just one of those years.
Yeah.
I
think Regal is closer to that, or is practically just a part of that front group of Metcalf and Short and Reed when he's there and all that. I think Hahn is a part of that group. I think he might be a notch above Sipes Chisholm. But,
absolutely, yeah.
Points-wise.
Yeah.
Yeah, but points-wise, it's not even close to how good he's been.
Regal is... When he's on, he's on. Texas, Millville. When he's off, he's off. Even if you take away the crashes, he's missed four motos due to crashes and concussions, which have to be a little scary. Two concussions that soon within each other. But like at Bud's Creek or Hangtown or Colorado, he kind of was just there. You know? I don't know. Weird how someone can elevate their game, JT. Just tracking, just feeling it.
Yeah, it's like that, though. I mean, I had tracks where I was way better than another track. I would go, like, you know, maybe, like...
Butts Creek.
10-10 one weekend.
Yeah.
And then go to a track I didn't like, Unadilla, and be, like, 18-19.
Right.
You know, just 1 week apart, nothing different but the track.
You were a Butts Creek specialist.
Yeah.
You love Butts Creek.
Yeah, Butts Creek, Troy... there was a few good ones that I really liked. I just, you step off the plane and it's like a different, different feel. You're just confident and everything's different. So that's a big part of it for sure.
What does Regal do next year? Weege? Does it go factory rod?
You know, I think a lot of that inconsistency is the lack of the ride. My broadcast colleague, Jeff Emick, says that he feels that when you get on factory equipment or you get a really good trainer and on a good program in general, you don't necessarily get a lot faster more than you get that. You find that combination every week.
The mindset of a champion.
You learn the mindset of a champion, and then you'd be consistent every week.
Right.
So he thinks a lot of that would be ironed out. It's not him as much as it's, you know, he is running up a sprinter van. So some weeks you can hit on it and make it work.
Yeah.
But you get a little bit of maybe a luck involved or whatever. They take the variables out when you're on a factory team. So I think that would really help him. I guess it all comes down to this dad deal. And I'll be completely honest. At the end of the day, I really don't have any documentation of how crazy this dude is. Like, everyone says, oh, he can't get a ride because his dad. Is he that bad? I mean, Regal is 18, an American kid, and he obviously works really hard. Those three factors alone, do you think teams would be salivating over this guy?
Yeah, I don't think...
How bad can the dad be?
I don't think the stepdad has anything to do with it. He's not even at the races. I just think that's an overreaction. But I think Regal's lack of Supercross results have something to do with it. I mean, he wanted on that 450 bad, and he got a shot, and I think he had a couple crashes and one mediocre finish, you know? So.
You know what, though? He never looked bad, though. In practice, he was usually fast in either class.
Yeah.
It wasn't like Cody Cooper out there that was just, even when he made a lap, you knew that could be the last. He didn't look bad on it.
On the light bike, I thought he looked really good many times in practice.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And again, he's only 18, and that was the first year he ever did it. So there's a chance he could actually be okay at Supercross.
Right.
And why aren't people beating on his door then? Why not?
Well, I just think there's so many guys without rides, right, JT?
Yeah,
I think it's more
product of the economy and not any spots to go to.
There's so many good guys that are going to need a ride. Andrew Short,
Millsaps. I mean, there's a lot of guys.
Tommy
Hahn. Really unsure of where they're
going. What's Shari going to do next year?
Your guess is good as mine. Probably his guess is good as yours.
Do you want to revert back to my preseason podcast where I said,
oh, here we go,
this will be the last year Chad Reed races in America?
I'm willing to take all bets on that.
You're still as confident as ever.
Oh, all right.
Confident as ever.
He's racing next year.
As confident as ever.
Yeah.
Okay.
Did you not see his Twitter this week?
I saw he's out for the year with Epstein Barr.
I said his Twitter, not his press release.
Oh, what does Twitter say?
His Twitter said, I will be back.
Oh.
I'm not done in capital letters, and I will be back to earn everybody's respect.
Yeah, I don't know if you can go off a Twitter thing as a statement, though. Twitter is blowing up, though, Wygant, as you know. It's getting there. It's breaking the news before the media.
Yeah, and I don't want to give things away. We're working on a story on that right now about you thought like getting live coverage of races was like the ultimate. But we've almost gone faster than live now.
Yeah.
You know? Like before the news even happens, you hear about it. So what? I don't know how the world's going to work in 5 years.
Yeah. I think it's kind of a cool thing, kind of a cool deal.
But I think dudes can back themselves into a corner because, like for example, with Reed on Twitter last week, he was thinking about a lot of things, and then going to a meeting with his business agents, and then he emerged with Epstein Barr. So, regardless of what happened, the trail of tweets wasn't. A lot of people were skeptical because of the trail of tweets.
That's what Weege thinks, JT. By the way.
I mean. I can understand that. Something's wrong with him, you know?
Yeah.
There's been something wrong, and he's been trying to figure out what that was for a long time. You know? And I'm not privy to his doctor, you know, patient conversations. So
You're not in those conversations?
No, I mean, he came to California, and, you know, he was there for like 3 or 4 days while he was meeting with his team trying to figure out what's going on. So I haven't seen him since then.
Right. And what I'm saying, the problem there is not that he's a liar. It's just that when you have like professional PR people might say, hey, listen, if you're going to be getting a bunch of blood tests, we might have different results. You might want to just not say anything for the next couple of days.
Yeah.
But some riders, they don't know. They're just going to say whatever they want, whenever they want. And then sometimes it can backfire on you.
Chad Reed being a key guy for saying whatever he wants, whenever he wants.
Yes, yes, which is awesome.
Yeah.
At times, but you got to be careful.
Right. Let's go to the 250 class. Christoph Purcell has a 36-point lead. I feel like
38 over 38.
Trey Kennard has the hat trick of nationals here, the three in a row.
Oh God!
Not the Trey, but a hat trick.
Oh my God!
I feel like Purcell though. I feel like Purcell hasn't been as good, and you know his second motos have been well documented, not very strong. I think I did an average point. He scores an average of 24 points in the first moto, and the second moto he scores an average of 17 throughout the series. So I don't know. I just feel like Purcell hasn't been as dominant. I talked to somebody who said he just he doesn't care. He doesn't want to be in the class. He knows he's going to win, and he's going to ride just as hard as he has to.
Maybe he had early flights.
Yeah.
Maybe he had early flights.
He did have some early flights.
Best press conferences are pesky.
Yeah. Did you hear about that, Weege?
No.
You didn't hear about that at Millville?
No.
He had a flight out on Saturday night out of Minneapolis. And
right.
Him and his agent were there, and they asked the Cowie guys if they could skip the press conference. And the Cowie guys said, no, you cannot skip the press conference. You need to be there. And then they said, well, what's the fine? We'll just pay the fine. And the Cowie guy said, there is no fine. You need to be there. It's not an issue. You have to be there. And Purcell looked at him and said, then I will go out and get fourth.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No.
So this is what we're dealing with here with him. Like, I just think he rides as hard as he has to. But in the end, though, Wygant, do you think he's hurting himself for next year?
I want to say, like, as far as the level of not caring, like, he's gotten to a whole new – we've seen guys not care before, but he's gone to the point where he cares about not caring, like, purposely gets fourth. That's a whole nother level, like, caring about not caring.
Yeah, well, I mean, in the end, the second moto started pouring rain, and he slipped back to 10th, so I don't think that was in the cards, but
anyway, yeah, I do think it's hurting him, and I would have thought up until maybe this weekend that it didn't matter, he had it on lockdown. But the way Kennard's riding, and 38 points is not a lot. Not with this many motos left.
Right.
I know you like this,
but if Kennard wins out and Purcell gets second every moto, he'll still win.
I even brought this up on the TV show, how bogus that stupid theory is.
Anyway,
like, how many times have guys gone 1-1, 2-2 this year at any race, let alone it's going to happen all four times in the last four rounds?
Yeah.
But I think he might have a serious problem on his hands now. Couple rounds, sure, Wilson got a win, sure, Ratchway got a win, but he knew it would all. The next week they'd give him the same amount of points right back.
Right.
I don't know if that's going to happen with Kennard. And I think that he was a little bit bummed about this, you know, second moto rep. And I think in the second moto, Aschugel, he was ready to race him. And then supposedly he had a bike problem. With his clutch cable got hit by a rock and snapped or something. I think he's going to want to beat Kennard in one of these races just to end all that speculation that he's not the guy.
Right.
And then he'll probably continue not caring and still win the title.
But is it just because we're used to him, or has he not been as impressive as last year?
I think he has not been as impressive, but I think that is because of the not caring.
Right.
I think he could be as good as he was last year if he felt like it. Last year he was trying as hard as he could, and he had to. He didn't know for sure that he was way better than everybody else yet, and he was in a battle with Dungey.
Right.
But it's the same. If Dungey was still in the class this year, I'm sure he'd care a lot more and ride a lot better.
Right. JT, what do you think?
I think he's as good or better than last year. You look at his practice times, they're ridiculous.
Right.
I mean, he was so much better than everybody in practice this weekend, especially the first practice. It was unbelievable, you know, so... I think Kennard's been on it the last couple of weeks, and I don't really know. It's really hard to say what goes on in Purcell's head, but I don't think his ability is any less. I think he's still capable of going the pace of anyone out there. I think it'll be telling. You know, he was claiming that Unadilla is his best track, and he can't wait to get out there. And You know, if he gets a hole shot and Kennard's on him, you know, it'll be interesting. You know, they had a big battle at Millville the first moto, and Purcell came out on top. So I don't think that Purcell's really given up the ghost as far as who's the best guy.
Yeah. So you're confident. You're as confident as ever.
Purcell. I mean, who's to say if Purcell's bike was really messed up at Washougal or not? He could have just not been feeling it. Second motos haven't really been that kind to him. Right. And
yeah, it's not like a second in the second moto is that terrible.
No, you know, I think he's a great series manager. You know, I think he would have won the series if his bike didn't break at Southwick last year. And obviously in Supercross, you know, he didn't win every race. He just manages the series. He did it in the World Championship also. You know, when he feels like it's time to go and he has it, he goes and wins. And when he doesn't, then he's not going to throw the series away because of it.
JT sounding as confident as ever, Wygant, in Porcel's abilities.
Yeah, I don't think, you know, as a rider, he hasn't gone backwards. But as far as what he has to do, yeah, he can get a 10th in a moto this year, where last year he couldn't afford that. So maybe last year at Millville he would have ground out a 5th in those conditions, and now he got a 10th. Yeah, I think when he needs it, he's as good as he was last year, if not better.
Yeah, but no, at Millville he won the first moto, right? So for,
right,
him, for him to get 4th overall, he's going to need...
You can bend that whole thing, JT.
He's going to need to do bad in the second moto to get 4th overall. So,
to avoid that press conference?
Yeah, 110, you know, I'm sure he's pretty good at math. 110 sounds like a 4th to me.
Okay, so he had to work really hard to avoid that press conference.
You think so? You think so?
I don't know. How can you not? How can you discount it when he claims, okay, I'll get 4th? He wins the first moto. The second moto, he's running near the front, starts raining. Yeah, maybe I want to go home. Maybe I get 10th.
Wow.
He does so much wacky stuff, I don't think you can count anything out. He does so much wacky stuff. I mean, the first moto there, Kennard had the lead. Kennard has all this momentum after winning Red Bull. He catches him, he passes him, he leaves him. Then he slows down, starts looking over every jump, loses the lead, passes him again, wins the moto.
Yeah.
He did that to, he jacked with Wilson like that in Colorado. He did it to Tomac in Texas. And I don't mean jacking with him like, you know, riding dirty. Like, he likes playing around with the dudes and battling them for a lap or two, and then it's like, okay, now I will go as fast as I can actually go by.
Yeah.
And in lap, he's gone.
Yeah.
It's so bizarre.
I have a question, though. What was going on with his interview at Washougal with "That's Why We Call Motocross"? This
I don't know what that. Yeah, his description of the track.
Yeah.
Washougal is why we call it motocross.
Yeah. Describe Washougal track, Christoph. It is what we call motocross. It is fun. It is good track. I like it.
It's why we racing.
It's why we racing.
It's why we race. Yeah. I think what he means is it's like such a fun, cool track. It's why you want to race, I guess. I'm just trying to help there.
It just came off really strange. You know, obviously we're making fun of a guy that English isn't his first language,
right,
so you can't always get your point across as clearly as you would like. But
right.
It seems strange.
Well, yeah, I think he can describe a track, though, better than that, like even though English isn't his first language.
Now, I do wonder this. Now, this, what you actually asked was, is this hurting him for next year? Now, the rep, JT hasn't even brought it up. Three of us haven't even brought it up. But the reputation a lot of people think is, oh, he's got physical problems, which do not allow him to ride as well in Moto 2. He gets tired, and then he can't eat and get energy, or he can't sweat, or he can't control his body temperature, or whatever. That would not be a good thing, I would think, to have to sell teams on. Yes, I represent the rider that has a physical ailment which cannot be cured and will not allow him to ride good two motos in the same day.
Please sign me for a lot of money.
What's that?
Please sign
me for a lot of money. Yeah, yes. Exactly. I don't know.
I don't know either. It's a good point.
He, in Millville, Mathis, were you near the podium at the end of Millville? I mean, he was, after that first moto, he was D-O-N-E. He was done.
Yeah, I heard. I wasn't there, but I heard I think Tim Ferry told me that he was
not doing well. We had to cut the camera because everything was coming off, including the pants. So once the pants came off, we had to, I mean, he was ready to go full naked right there next to the stage. I mean, he was done. He dropped the bike after the finish. So
he is French.
The 10th in the second moto, that might have been a factor there. I mean, I don't know. Does he get tired, or is not tired, but does he lose energy?
Yeah.
Does he not feel good?
I don't know. As usual, you know, his mechanic says he was injured during the week and that affected him. Other people, Villeman was on the Pulp MX show saying he cannot eat all day. So by the time the second motos come, he's physically exhausted. He cannot eat because of his injury.
Right.
I heard a theory about sweating. I heard a theory about just hating press conferences. So I don't really know. I have no idea. I mean, you know, second moto this weekend, he was fine. He was great. He got second, but he was great. Second is a good was yep. a good finish. Yep. So I have no clue. I don't know. I don't know.
I can tell you this. Next year, if you can't go in the second moto, Ryan Dungey and Ryan Villopoto and whoever else, James Stewart or Chad Reed or whoever else, they can go the second moto. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's going to get punished if they can't figure out something to remedy the second moto. You can't run this formula in the 450 class and expect for it to work.
Right. Thanks, Kevin.
Any of it. I don't think you can leave races, slow down, give dudes thumbs up for two laps, and then take off. Like any of the game plan, none of that should be able to work to that level.
Yeah. No, absolutely. What about Trey Kinnard? Very impressive. A little rough start for him, but, I mean, of course, he started working with a certain rider, you know, from a certain state, and things have really turned around. How much credit, JT, do you give Ferry? I mean, obviously, Trey's out there riding the bike. I asked him this in the very question. I love playing it up, of course, about how awesome Timmy has helped him. But truly, really, how much has Red Dog helped Kinnard, in your opinion?
I think it's definitely helped. You know, I don't think you can say, okay, Red Dog started helping him.
81%.
Now he's won every race. Can't. No, I think, you know, I think everyone at every level has holes in their program.
Uh-huh.
And obviously Trey doesn't have many. Because,
what would yours be?
Lack of overall speed.
Yep.
For me, there's a lot. There's a lot. I mean, I don't have a factory bike, which hurts.
Right.
That's not my fault.
Okay, Ryan Clark.
No,
I'm
not.
I'm just kidding. I'm joking.
I'm not in the Ryan Clark ballpark where I, you know, go on record saying if I had this bike, I would be battling with Chad Reed,
right.
Which he has said, and I've told Chad Reed many times this, which has come with much laughter.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that Timmy can bring insight. You know, at the races, you're
incredible
in
the insight.
Yeah, we're in the shell as a racer at the races. Yeah. You can't go watch the other motos because you have to rest. You can't watch the other practices. You can't watch other guys in your class, what they're doing. You know, you get to watch the video, but that's, you know, kind of narrow your view, you know, of what's going on. So I think when Timmy can go back and say, hey, this guy's going outside here, you know, this guy's doing this in this section, you know, maybe – you know, there's so many things that Red Dog can bring when he's at the races that, you know, he's seen and done for 20 years.
Right.
And even, like, Red Dog wasn't at Washougal, you know. Mm-hmm. But I think that Timmy calling him during the week and telling him new things to try and where he may be weak and all this stuff, it's got to have a positive influence. And obviously it's been showing.
Right. Well, again, what do you think? The Ferry helping out Kinnard thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's ridden even better over the three wins. Like, Redbud was a good, hard, grounded out, fought his way through. Millville, he was right up front in both motos and almost won them both. And then
this
he
weekend.
Just dominated Washougal.
Yeah.
Yeah, then he just dominated Washougal. So, and he looked, Washougal, man, it was like he was on a different track. Like, it was like there were no bumps on the track when he was riding. But the Ferry factor's got to be big. But I think another thing was he's only made it three or four rounds into the tour every year before he gets hurt.
Yep.
And I know when he got to Colorado, he said he was happy that he finally even made it to the fifth. He had never made it to the fifth round before.
Yeah.
And that's when he started riding better.
Right.
And he always sucks in the first moto of the year bad. Always starts in a hole outdoors. So I think maybe the outdoors thing, kind of like what JT was saying, it takes a little while for him to adjust to that mode.
Right.
And then he combined that with hooking up with Ferry about halfway through the year, and now we're finally seeing what he probably could have done in 08 and 09 also.
Right. Well, from what I understand, you got a rare one-on-one private dinner with Tim Ferry a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
And and he amazed you with some of his observations and his theories on life.
I feel much like Kinnard that I've gone to another level in the last couple of weeks now that I'm working with Ferry also.
Right, right.
Yeah, there were mistakes that others are making. I feel like I'm announcing a different race. Like, I'm not hitting those bumps and finding those holes anymore.
Did you hear about that?
Just because of the knowledge.
JT?
No, I did not.
Yeah, Millville, yeah. Ferry, and Wygant.
One-on-one?
One-on-one.
Wow.
Yeah.
One-on-one. Mathis flew in late, and Trey had to go to a team function. We were left just the two of us, and it was kind of like, so, would you like to maybe hang out?
Go out today? Together?
Maybe we could just hang out?
Scale,
friends,
scale of 1 to 10, where was your jealousy level there, Steve?
You know what? It wasn't that high. It really wasn't.
No?
No, I've had a lot of those one-on-one dinners.
Trust level is trust levels.
Well, but, great. My jealousy level is at least a 9.
But no, it wasn't. I'm happy that someone else experienced the Tim Ferry experience, which, JT, as you well know, it's a lot of nuggets of wisdom, and then there's other things that make you shake your head.
Yeah, there's a lot of both.
There's a lot of both.
Yeah.
Well, there was a restaurant right next to our hotel called the Canadian Honker, and the hotel I was staying in was one booked by Mathis, so I figured that's why you picked it.
Yeah, no, it wasn't, but it was awesome.
I heard you guys looked at the menu.
In honor of Mathis, we tried to go to the Canadian Honker, and then Jimmy goes and grabs the menu and looks at it for like 12 seconds and goes, I can't eat here.
Yeah, just another, I can't eat here.
I don't know why.
Who knows why? Who knows what it was? all right, well, let's move this thing along a little bit. Enough Tim Ferry talk.
I do want to touch one more thing on Kennard.
Okay.
And I do think that once he broke through and beat Purcell,
mm-hmm.
I think that it compounds big time. Like, say he won the
mindset of a champion.
Well, I don't want to.
That's right.
I don't want to steal that from Fro because I feel like that's his catchphrase. But I feel
like ShamWow.
I feel like that may be on his pants at Surfercross. Mindset of a champion on his butt patch. But I think like Kennard, he hole shots the second moto in his head, you know, and I'm sure at Washougal.
Oh, Washougal.
I feel like Red Dog and whoever has got to be putting this in his head because I would be.
Right.
I hole shot. Purcell's got nothing for me the second moto.
Yeah.
This guy's done. He's got, you know, 8 gallons of water in his boots right now. There's no way he can race with me.
Yeah.
This second moto. So I'm out of here. You know what I mean? It's his head. I'm gone. This moto's over on the first lap. This guy can't beat me. And that builds. You know what I mean? And that, you know, as you reinforce that, it carries over into practice and it carries over into the first motos. And every time you see Purcell now, that fear of, oh, this guy's incredible on the track. What am I going to do when he catches me? That goes away.
Yeah.
And you start worrying about your own race instead of Purcell's race, and then
it
grows and grows and grows to the point where you're not scared of the guy anymore.
Yeah,
and it's this guy can't beat me anymore. So.
And Trey did make a mention that Purcell has been really cool to him. And Trey said, you know, maybe I earned his respect. You know.
Yeah, I don't know. It's tough to say when. You know, if the points get closer, if that respect level changes.
Right.
I really don't feel like Purcell is that concerned with the points right now. 38 points is a lot when I feel like Purcell, if everything's, you know, good, I don't think he can really be more than a third or fourth place guy in a moto.
Right.
You know, unless, you know, disaster happens.
Right.
I don't think he's that concerned, especially with his mindset.
Right. Weege.
Yeah.
I could barely hear you there with some announcements in the background, but I don't know. I want to make sure you're still there. I feel like, let's move on from that. Dean Wilson. Dean Wilson has been very, very fast. How Wygant?
I'd say Dean Wilson is the most positive surprise to me of the whole series.
Yeah.
I mean, they figure to be good. Anyone on pro circuits usually pretty good, but you never know with the rookie guys.
Right.
And I know Tomac lit the world on fire in one race. But, I mean, he's pretty much a guy every race. And even Millville, Washougal had terrible results. But he crashed early in both motos and then passed a ton of guys.
Mm-hmm.
He is consistently fast. And I don't know if I expect him to be that good.
But
I'm really impressed.
Yeah, me too. And everybody's moving out of that thing next year.
Exactly.
Kennard, Purcell, Barcia, anybody that sort of has beaten him. Barcia's won. Barcia's been hot and cold. He hasn't been. I don't think Barcia has been as impressive looking to me. He doesn't ride with the same fury that he did last year. Do you agree with that, Wygant?
Yeah, I think so. But I think everyone weans themselves away from that. If you watch any, I know you're huge in the amateur scene.
Yes, Steve. Massive. Yes, big fan.
Dude, everybody rides like Barcia, and then eventually he'd be gone. Or Heck, Stewart invented the Bubba scrub, and he barely even does it himself anymore, which I know you've even asked him about. Like, yeah. It just seems like everyone mellows on that as time goes by, and he's just going through the same process.
Right.
I don't know. JT, why? Why does that happen?
I don't know. I've never really been able to scrub or ride.
Like Basha?
Ride crazy like that. I don't know. I think you know, take some big soil samples and realize that, you know, you race a lot on the pro level, like a lot. You know, you don't race six, you know, amateur nationals a year. You race 18 supercrosses if you're in 450 and 12 nationals.
17.
So, yeah, whatever. So that's a lot of racing to do and a lot of chance. You know, if you're taking that many chances, you're going to get bit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So you realize that if you're going to be there all year, you know, it's going to be a fine line of, you know, I can still go that fast and I can maybe not take that many chances. So I don't know. I think that weighs heavy on people. You know, Barsha had some big get offs last year.
He did. Yeah.
You know, Texas and some other races come to mind where also, I think you look at the moto length outdoors, it's 35 minutes, and your threshold of being able to pull off some big close calls in a 5-lap amateur race versus a 35-minute national is different.
You figure
at an amateur national, I have 5 laps. I'm going nuts for these 5 laps.
Balls out, if you will.
Yeah. And most likely, everything's going to be good, but you go on track and you're dead tired at 28 minutes and you're still taking these chances, bad things are going to happen a lot of times.
Are you guys happy as I am to see Rattray do well? I think he's a good dude. And I mean, he didn't do that well last year. Even I got Mitch Payton to admit that Mitch Payton admitted to me that he was surprised at Rattray's struggles last year, which is a lot for a team manager to say. Basically saying, I didn't think he'd be that bad. But I'm happy that he's back up and he's a front runner and the guy's a good dude and charges hard and races clean. And what do you think, Wygant?
Yeah, I am pleasantly surprised. I'm glad that he's back up there. Last year he was way under par. I mean, it's funny. The first TV show we did at the beginning of the year last year, the battle was supposed to be the guys from the GPs, Purcell, Searle, and Rattray, against, like, say, Dungey and Kennard and some of the American kids. And to think that at the beginning of the year you were thinking that Rattray and Searle last year could potentially be champions. You know, when you think about how last year went, you never once thought, oh, yeah, this guy could be the guy once the series began.
That's crazy.
The hype, they didn't live up to the hype. So he has bounced back quite well, better than I thought. He is the only guy ever, I believe, that actually the theory of, well, he'll get better in the second year once he learns the track. I guess for one guy, it actually happened.
He's admitted that. He's admitted the tracks.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. He's actually admitted that. Is Barsha better having learned the tracks this year? You know what I mean? Like,
no.
Did Villeman get better when he won, you know, two nationals in a row in 2000 and didn't win any in 2000? You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't. It almost never works that way. Tortelli was awesome his first year. Langston was awesome his first year. He's the first guy I know that actually happened.
Right.
He got better.
Right. Yeah. No. Exactly. I'm pumped on him. And then there's Brock Tickle and Blake Wharton. They are just there. They're fast. Nobody talks about them.
Yeah, we're skipping Dino, though.
We talked about Dino?
Yeah, but I don't think enough.
JT wants to talk about Dino again.
Well, I think Wilson's been impressive.
I don't think we let Dino. We didn't let him weigh in on Dino.
Yeah.
I
would be.
He's upset. Yeah.
Yeah.
Canadian or Scottish? JT, Canadian or Scottish?
I say Scottish. I mean, he's.
You know what? F you, dude.
Well, his parents are from there. He was born there. Just because he lived in Canada for a
Jeff
few
Ward
years.
Was born in Scotland.
Yeah.
Scottish? Jeff Ward?
Technically, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I guess it helps the fact that Jeff Ward doesn't sound like the leprechaun.
Yeah. I mean, well, he was born in Scotland.
Right.
He grew up there until he was, what, 6? Then he moved to Canada for a while.
Yeah.
Then he moved to America.
Yeah.
So why should Canada claim him over America?
Whatever. Wygant, what do you think? Scottish or Canadian?
Dude, the Canadian thing is just luck for the Canadians. The difference in Jeff Ward was, what did he move to the United States when he was like 4, and then he was there forever.
Right.
I mean, Wilson was born in Scotland. His parents were born in Scotland. He lived in Scotland for as long as he did live in Canada. So how does that make him Canadian in any way, shape, or form? I understand if you move when you're an infant, but didn't he move when he was like 8?
Yeah.
And then, like, only lived in Canada until he was like 16 and then moved here. So He has, to me, less Canadian credentials than anything.
I think he moved to the States before he was 16, even. 14, yeah. Like, he's been in the States for a long time.
So but he's been in the U.S. and Scotland longer than Canada, and he was born in Scotland.
Typical.
Yet somehow Canada wins.
Everybody's out to get Canada. That's how I look at it. But, no, you know what? I'm a little bummed that he asked for the Scottish flag just as a Canadian, but I totally understand it. And I do hope he gives the middle finger to Canadians' Motocross the Nation's effort and rides for New England. Or New England.
New England.
Wow.
Riding for the ADSC.
He's going to ride with Dowd and Nice.
Nice.
Is it Nice from there?
No, Nice is from South Carolina.
Oh, oops. yeah, so, I kind of hope he does ride for Great Britain or England or whatever they call it. UK.
Whatever they call it, yeah.
Yeah, whatever. All right, are you done with Dean Wilson? I mean, I'm pumped on him. He's a good dude, too. Hey, Weege, he's a good kid.
Yeah, he's awesome all around, man. He's funny. He's a good interview. He gets it when you get around with him. So, I don't think the beginning of the year anyone said, all right, you're going to lose Weimer and Trey Kennard and Porcello are going to move up. Who do you think's position himself to be the guy next year? I can't imagine that Wilson was on the head of anyone's list, but I bet he is now.
Yeah, him and Blake Baggett were the guys, and Baggett's going to end up back at Pro Circuit. So,
he'll be good. Yeah. He'll be good.
I think my point more with Wilson was up until this weekend he was second in points.
No, he was second. He lost it last weekend at Millville.
Okay. Well, regardless,
right?
I mean, the guy's never ridden these tracks before. He's his first year pro.
Right.
To come in and be second in points majority of the season, you probably won't end up second in points, but
right.
It's pretty strong.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure you watched him this weekend. You know, he was at the front, crashed, and then came back to the front by gangbusters. I mean, he was moving.
He was blazing this weekend.
Yeah. So I've been really impressed with him. You know, his mechanic is one of my really good friends, so obviously I take more interest in him than a lot of the guys.
Right.
I watch him, you know, at all the motos. So he's been better than I thought he would be. I think he's going to win a lot next year, I think.
Well, that's not that big of a prediction, JT, but whatever. What about Weimer? Weimer struggles. Wygant, what do you make of that?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of like last year. He started the year off kind of rough and then had a couple things work out right so we could bounce back quickly. I don't think there's much to it. I don't, unless there's stories I haven't heard. I don't think it's that he's lazy or it's pressure. I mean, maybe eventually that builds up. But I think, you know, in that class it's very easy to have, you know, a first-turn crash or whatever ruin your day, and then that compounds a couple of times, and the next thing you know, everyone's saying, what's wrong? This guy's sucking. And then you start thinking about things. If he had had, say, one good moto early in the year, everything could be totally different.
Right.
I think there really might not be much more to it than that.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Davalos, Searle, any thoughts on those guys?
I feel bad for Searle, man. He obviously was fast at the beginning of the year, and he has no leverage to go on for a ride, no supercross, anything. This summer might be a wash unless he really comes back to these last four. I feel bad because I think the guy could be good.
Right. Will Hahn going to Geico Honda next year. Will Hahn's certainly going to be right in the mix next year, both indoors and out.
Yeah.
Strong rider.
I think Weimer's kind of in a bad spot.
Right.
He's got to ride a 450 next year.
Yeah.
You know, Supercross win is about as good as it could go. And then outdoors has been a train wreck so far.
Yeah.
He's been turning around lately, but I was practicing with him there for a few weeks, and I know he's got to be stressing a little bit, you know, where, you know, you come off a lights championship, a la Red Dog, and then outdoors hasn't gone to plan, and the economy's in the toilet. There's less rides than there's been in the last 10 years, probably.
Right.
You know, where does he go from here?
Right.
You know, does Mitch have a 450 team that he could possibly go to, or does he take a step down to Valley, or, you know, and that's not a dig at Valley, but they're not Pro Circuit. They're not Factory Kawasaki.
Right.
They're not Factory Honda. And I know that he was.
What's a better team, Moto Concepts or Valley Yamaha?
Probably a wash.
A wash?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe Valley because they have full Pro Circuit bikes. I don't know what Moto Concepts bikes are like.
Okay.
But you hear bad things from every team out there.
Right.
It's like who do you want to listen to?
Right.
Whose word do you take?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I know Weimer was kind of bummed that, you know, Kennard jumped up to 450 and podium five races in a row, and then bam, he's got a factory Honda ride. Yet he's still losing the championship to Weimer.
Right.
You know,
right.
So I know that was pretty big bummer for Weimer at the time. He's like, you know, I have nothing right now. I don't have
but
a factory.
But Kennard was in the system. That's how they did
it. Of course. Yeah. But I think if Kennard jumped up and didn't do well, does factory Honda sign him before outdoors even start? Probably not.
No, yeah.
Probably not. Yeah. And Weimer didn't have that opportunity. They don't have a situation where
Weimer can step in.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He can't go ride a 450.
Right.
You know, whether he would have done as well as Kennard, that's anybody's guess.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Right now, he's kind of, you know, in no man's land as far as a ride for next year.
Right. JT, all the guys you ride with, Troy Adams, Chad Reed, Jake Weimer, Tim Ferry's retired.
Nick Way.
Nick Way.
Adam Cincirillo.
Okay, well, Cincirillo's not different, but they're all, everyone's kind of had some rough patches.
Myself included?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It happens. It's racing.
Wow.
Name some guys that haven't, other than maybe like Dungy.
Ricky Carmichael.
He's retired.
Yeah. Is she still there, Wygant?
Well done.
Yeah. All right, well, let's wrap this thing up. Any last thoughts? Biggest disappointment in the 450 class?
Reed. I really was looking forward to him and Dungy battling. I mean, how could you predict who could win between those two? I mean, I thought it was going to be just epic.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate that it didn't work out that way for whatever reason. I have no idea why, but...
Right.
I thought Dungy was better at Supercross than outdoors. I'm really surprised that he's actually almost been better outdoors than he was at Supercross, and he was Supercross champ.
Okay. JT, biggest disappointment, quickly.
I mean, obviously, I have to say Chad because I know how ready he was and how much he wanted to show what was up outdoors.
Right.
So I'm sure for himself it's the biggest disappointment, too.
Mine's Mike Alessi.
Yeah, that's a valid point.
Okay, James Stewart's coming back at Unadilla. JT, give me moto scores.
James Stewart at Unadilla?
Yep.
2-1, 1-2, some in that range.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wygant, give me some moto scores for James Stewart at Unadilla.
That's a great. I'm going to go with that same answer. That's a nice, safe answer. 2-1 or 1-2, I like it. I'm going to go with that, too.
Okay. I go 3-1.
What about you, Steve?
I go 3-1 or 1-3.
Who beats him other than Dungy?
Kevin Windham. Wait. No. not after this weekend.
Kevin has a lot of time to prepare now, though.
Yeah, he does. He does. Hey, Weege, was Windham's problem blisters? Was he blaming that problem, or was it just...
No, I didn't actually hear what it was. I don't know. It was kind of weird that he got worse the second race back, but
very,
it might have.
On a track that he does better at. On a smoother track. And one of his better tracks, he went worse. That was very surprising.
Yeah, so maybe you're right. Although I talked to Tedesco yesterday, and it sounds like, JT, you would experience this more than anybody else, there, the two of us on the phone at least. The ramping up and recovering and all that stuff seems to be a big thing. Tedesco says that his problem at Millville was he worked so hard that last week to try to cram in as much as he could that he was in horrible shape by the time he got to Millville. If he had done less, he would have been better off. So maybe Windham was the same thing. He exerted so much that previous week at Millville that it caught up to him.
Yeah, racing yourself into shape, especially outdoors, is a really hard thing to do. You know, how do you go about it? Do you kill yourself during the week to try to be better a month from now?
Mm-hmm.
Or do you not do much and try to peak on that weekend, but you're not really building anything for the future?
Right.
You know, there's who's to say what's better, you know? Do you want to say, okay, the last two races, I'm going to be a badass because I'm killing myself right now, and I'm going to be terrible now because I have nothing left come Friday and Saturday when I fly to the races. I'm completely worked.
Right.
So, I don't know.
You
know.
Actually, my biggest disappointment is Justin Brayton.
Really?
Yeah. I thought he'd be much better.
Yeah.
Even though he missed the first three races, I thought he'd be much better.
Not for me. Brayton's more of a Supercross guy for me.
Really?
Yeah, for sure.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Another person, we'll touch on this real quickly. Weege, did you hear Aaron Bates ask Ryan Dungy about James Stewart on the podium?
Yes, and also in the press conference, Rob Bytus had some great questions for him. And Gary Bailey, who you guys know is awesome, also asked some great questions to him in the press conference. They're not afraid to ask, and Dungy actually has to answer real questions.
And how did Dungy handle it in the press conference? I didn't think he handled it very well on the podium when Aaron Bates said, you know, the fastest man in the world is coming back. You know, what do you think about that? And I thought Dungy should have said, I've been here all summer, or something like that.
He did a lot better in the press conference. He said, they said, you know, what are you going to do? You have points to worry about. And also, Bailey asked him, your strategy has been, you know, third or fourth because, you know, you can wear the guys down. But are you confident you can do that against Stewart? And he said, well, no, you don't know about Stewart. He could easily just get the whole shot and check out. So I do have to think about that. But as far as points are concerned, I'm not just going to let somebody come in here and walk all over me.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
Yeah. So he was a lot better than ready to take the challenge.
All right.
But he said debates, which I think was the right answer. It's a great opportunity for him. So I think that's the right answer.
Everything,
he hasn't been able to prove himself, but he's looking forward to the chance to do it.
Everything's a great opportunity. He's working really hard. He's got to give it up to his team.
Got to give it to the team and a man up above.
Yeah, and a man up above. Great opportunity.
You guys are hating.
I'm real fortunate.
You guys are hating pretty bad right now.
Well, we're media guys.
Yeah, but
I said that he gave the right answer. I think saying it's a great opportunity is the perfect answer.
You guys are mimicking his podium speech.
Well, yeah, I can't help that.
Is it wrong for some of us in the media to want more?
No, but what would you like him to say on the podium?
I would love him to giggle like Villopoto and then just ruin everybody.
Yeah, but that has a way of biting you in the ass.
How was Villopoto on the broadcast? I thought he was pretty good.
Yeah, he was. He didn't throw anybody under the bus. Like, he did a great job of
When he was talking about Dungy and Alessi, was he just grinding something? Was he just, you know, as he was speaking, was he like punching himself in the nuts over and over, or like?
All I know is he had gauze on the vein on his elbow and hospital band. I don't know. Maybe they drugged him before he came in.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That's all I know. He came in and he was very subdued about it.
I got Ryan Villopoto winning this series if he was healthy.
Yeah, I mean, I have some insight because he's been nice enough to let me hang out at the house
right.
and ride with those guys a little bit. And
insight you're going to share with us or no?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh.
I mean, I can tell you that him sitting out right now is killing him.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how much worse of mental anguish you can go through having to watch Ryan Dungy, who's been one of his biggest rivals,
right.
just dominate.
Right.
He's got to be. I mean, it's killing him. Literally, right. like he's a different person. He's like bitter all the time.
He was grouchy at the end of the day at Washougal. He was
bitter.
Grouchy.
I mean, it's wearing on him. It's, you know, painfully obvious. You know, Nick was living with him, and Nick's like, dude, this guy needs a race. He's killing me.
Yeah.
You know, he's just so like ready to be out there and, you know, show everybody that, you know, Dungy's not. Not that Dungy's not amazing, but he can be beat.
Yes.
You know, and that's what everybody thinks right now is, oh, Dungy's unstoppable.
Right.
So.
Well, cool. Hey, guys, thanks for doing this. Weej, I know you're on a layover. You got a lot of work to do. You got a busy week at X doing research and doing whatever it is they're doing to pay you, whatever they're paying you to do. But
there's a lot of alternates that have to be seated into the field that I have to track down. That's the work.
Really? Who wins the X Games, Weej? Who's in?
Right now, all signs point to Hanny.
Hanny
again?
Mr.
Reliable.
Wow.
Mr. Consistency. if there's one man you can count on,
yeah,
Hanny.
Right.
He's always going to be there for you. He's always going to put in the effort, come up big.
Drinking this most morning?
What's that?
You drinking this morning?
It's hilarious. Like, I had to write that in like the write-ups for ESPN, like, who is the favorite? And I said, believe it or not, the most inconsistent, unreliable guy ever is now the most reliable guy. Everyone else has dropped out. You don't know what they're going to bring. But you know Hanson's going to be good for X Games.
Yeah,
he's the only guy you can count on.
He's going to be really
crazy.
Honda guys told me Wyndham's back in.
What?
Yeah. So.
How does that happen?
I don't know. He's back in.
Oh, okay.
He's feeling it.
I think maybe
he could beat him.
Maybe struggling a little bit this weekend. Kind of changed his focus. I think he went from Millville, if I get a little bit better, I can win.
Yeah.
So then he struggled this weekend. So he's like, whatever.
No, whatever.
Yeah, I should go race X.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. He'll be there under the Geico team, though, they said. Not a Honda team.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I
think he has a really good Supercross setup with Geico already, maybe.
Yeah. Remember, though, Hanny chased him down last year.
Yeah.
Hunted him down.
Trust me, Hanny's going to be good.
Yeah.
Hanny, I mean, if you follow Twitter, Hanny's confident for this race. I think Hill was going to be good. Those two are going to be maybe tough. You know, they were going to be competitive.
Yeah.
Hill's out, obviously, unfortunately.
Is Lawrence in? Wagant?
At the moment, he is. And I almost got a hold of Sipkovic and got some info on him last week. And the trail's gone cold. So
I don't think that's going to matter. I don't think Lawrence has anything for Hanny.
No?
No.
Nothing.
Not at X Games.
No.
That X Games track is going to be really slippery. All throttle control, just like last year.
Yep.
And weekend. Hanny's going to be the most prepared. I guarantee you he'll be
like
the most prepared.
Like going into the outdoors, same yeah. kind of thing.
He's been right. riding Supercross for right. a month or two. Just one goal, one race. Right. All that matters is X Games, where nobody else has that, you know, same mindset.
Right.
So okay. I think he's by far the favorite.
All right. Weej has to go. We said we'd keep it short. We did not. So apologize for that, Weej.
Yeah, my flight board's in 2 minutes. Thanks.
All right. Hey, see you at Unadilla, bud. Thank you for doing the Pulp MX podcast.
By the way, I just want everyone to know that every weekend, Mathis's advice for me is, hey, man, you got to learn to say no to things. You let people, you do too much. You got to say no to projects. It's yeah. busy. You just got to like that. And then what happens? He texts me on Sunday and says, can you do this podcast?
Yeah.
I say no, and he goes off on me.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's already mad that I didn't help with the Bottom Line show over the weekend. So.
Yeah. Yeah, fantastic.
So now you know what I'm up against.
Tell everybody else no but me.
Yes, exactly. Great. Do as I say, not as I do.
Right on. Well, thank you, Wygant. Thank you for coming on.
Yeah, thanks, guys. It was cool.
All right, see you.
See ya.
Bye. All right, JT, and thank you, JT, for coming in and staying at my house and doing this podcast.
Yeah, I really had nothing else to do. It was either this or HBO.
All right, thank you.
Yeah.